Many years ago, I was living on the outskirts of Chiang Mai City at the foot of Mount Doi Su Thep. Actually, I was on the last road before the forest. And one evening, I was hanging out at a friend's workplace, and we got a text saying that the mountain was on fire. We went up to the roof, and we instantly saw the ominous red sky above the mountain. We rushed home to grab some essentials and evacuate. On the motorbike drive there, the smell of smoke was thick. Ash was falling down, and as we drew closer, we could feel the heat from the flames. We grabbed passports, laptops, essentials, and stashed it at a friend's place. From there, we went to the exhibition center on the northern end of the canal road. There, a crowd had gathered to watch the forest fire spread down the mountain. We just sat and watched it there. These long red streaks cut out of the night, glaring at us from the familiar hill. The hill that is the ever-present backdrop of life for all in the city. We slept at a friend's that night. Coming back the next morning, the fire was extinguished. Fortunately, it hadn't reached our place, though the surroundings were covered in ash. I've since moved out of the city. I'm no longer in view of that mountain, but last night, the same thing happened again. It erupted into flames as the city watched on. In the last episode of this mini-series, we're going to talk about forest fires. We're also going to talk about hunting, what life is actually like for corn farmers, and what is to be done about it all. Hey, welcome back. The air is still hanging at around 150 ppm here, vastly exceeding safe levels. Last night, I was looking through some pictures on my phone from rainy season of last year, and I spent a lot of time in the forest last year, and the pictures are filled with verdant green mossy grounds, close-ups of fungi and insects. I felt the cool of the forest to return, but it's 44 degrees outside today and the air is a toxic hell, so the wait continues. It's really quite bleak, no? And also quickly before we get into it, really, I just want to mention, I was talking to a farmer friend from Lampoon yesterday about all of this, and she said, like, don't 100% blame corn, although it pretty much is all there to blame. But there are other crops like pineapple in Chiang Rai, which is burnt, not to the same degree. And yeah, she also said, like, we do burn other waste, though not the whole field. So for example, longan, which is big in Lampoon, they'll burn the waste from the longan trees, but they won't burn, you know, the orchard, obviously. So yeah. Just throwing that out there for her. Anyway, there is, in the forest right now around here, still the danger of forest fires, as I mentioned in the intro. I haven't really mentioned forest fires that much, but it is a significant factor in the annual smog. There are two serious causes for forest fires. One is a fire from cornfields escaping into the surrounding forest, something which no doubt happens en masse. The other cause, and more commonly found to take the blame in Thai language media, that is hunting. And I'm covering my bases here by talking about hunting. So I'm quite sure that hunting was the cause of those two aforementioned forest fires on Doi Su Thep. There are no cornfields to speak of, but there are poor villages where one typical hunting technique is for a group of hunters to split into two, and one makes a line of fire which scares animals into fleeing downwind in a certain direction where they can be predated by the other group of hunters. And dry season two is a particularly good time to practice this, as most of the foliage from the jungle has fallen away, allowing for greater lines of sight and an easier hunt. Now, normally I will refuse to blame poor villagers, but this practice is really quite not okay. I understand that in some cases this is used to capture rare species for the wildlife or the illegal rare game market, in which case, yes, we can happily blame the buyers and fuck them. But honestly speaking, and I know this from living here, it is sometimes just a case that people go hunting like this because they like to go hunting, and that I personally can't abide by. Now, how much of the smoke actually comes from forest fires, however, is again relatively negligible compared to corn. We have to remember trends and the time in which the smoke emerged. Again, the smoke started 20 years ago. And again, over that 20 years, corn planting increased by 400%. I do not think hunting increased by 400%. And when I say I can't abide by it, it's not just me. Last week, a group of villagers in San Patong went to the forest with monks and holy relics. There, they sat by an ancient old tree and laid a curse for any hunters who burnt the forest to be forever damned. So fuck the hunters, yes indeed, but we need to keep our eyes on the real enemy here, friends. And that is the masters of the corn and their grand conspiracy. These hills that surround me now, when you can see them, they are astonishingly beautiful. I remember when I first started to spend time in some of the rural villages in Lampung. It's straight out of a Ghibli film. These dinky little wooden houses with friendly grandmas napping under them, glimmering paddies with lazy buffalo roaming around, kids fishing on tiny bridges over bubbling streams. Sometimes it is unbelievably idyllic. And oftentimes, it can be hard to reconcile places like this with the poverty that surrounds them. This idyllic setting can allow a revisionist idealism space to enter in. Yes, the people are poor, but look how beautiful it is. Look how happy they seem. This is dangerous thinking, friends. There are many pernicious elements about life in the rural north. Above all, however, is that of debt. We talked about this in the first episode of the series, but familial debt is really the driver of this latifundia. It's a mechanism that turns farmers into serfs, tethered to the land, like in the time of the Sakdi Na feudal era. In Ghosts of the Red Soil, I wrote, following the coup against Thaksin, there was an economic vacuum as his policies were rolled back. A recession set in, though it was predominantly felt in the semi-periphery areas that his coalition had invested in so heavily. The small-time debts of families ballooned when they were unable to make repayments. Many had no choice other than to turn to semi-illegal loan sharks. What was once a debt of around 50,000 baht in 2006 is now in the hundreds of thousands. A noose tied around the necks of the working class, though they can't pull away the stool, as the debt will be passed on to the next generation. Many of the decaying homes that were built on credit during Thaksin's golden era are now far less valuable than the debt that they've incurred. 21st century indentured servitude in full effect. Household debt skyrocketed from 40% of GDP at the time of the coup to 90% in 2021. For most families, the responsibility falls on the next generation. There's no chance that parents who took out the loans could raise the capital to pay it back. The children of the Thaksin era now reach the age where they can sell their labor and inherit the noose. It is debt that forces more forest to be cleared, more corn to be planted, and more waste to be burned. As I said, it's the engine behind the latifundia and the propellant behind the smoke. Again, Sarapi district in Chiang Mai has the highest rate of lung cancer in the country. The smog issue is not just an issue of toxic smog for everyone who lives in the North. It's an explicitly class-based issue, which becomes all the more pernicious the further down the ladder you descend. So, now I'm going to have to talk about what's happened in the past year since the election, and maybe swing to more of an optimistic note, actually. And I'm so sorry to those middle-class listeners with master's degrees who are still sticking with me, but I need to talk about Pur Thai. Because this year, 2024, was supposed to be the worst year on record. Sorry about these loud birds. You hear them? So rude. Anyway, 2024 was supposed to be the worst year on record. For starters, it's an El Nino year, with an unbelievable heatwave. Like I said, or I was saying earlier, it's 44 degrees today, and when you look at the weather app, it will be for the indefinite future, and I think it has been for at least 3 weeks, maybe a month now. And also we've had very, very little rain over the past winter, which further dries out the farmland. We were all geared up for the worst smoke ever, and it didn't come. Now don't get me wrong, it's still bad, but it's nowhere near as bad as we thought it would be, and it's far better than last year even. Let's just take a quick look at the data. So in 2023, Chiang Rai had 20 days where the PPM was over 200. 20 days. This year, there have only been two. At the beginning of the season, in February of 2023, Chiang Rai had 8 days where the PPM was over 150. This year, there were none. Again, this was supposed to be the worst year on record, but actually it's been an improvement. Last year, I wrote an article called "To Stop the Smog Pollution, Empower the Farmers." I've repeated sections from that article in the past two seasons, so I'm not going to do it again. But much of the basic data and reporting from that piece has been reflected in this series. Now, in that piece, while examining what we've examined so far, there was also a prescriptive aspect to it. And essentially, I argued that basically the farmers need more bargaining power to basically not grow corn anymore, because corn typically for most farmers is a very small percentage of their actual income. So for example, I use the example of one farmer who only made about 3,000 baht a year from corn. She just had one small field, but that was enough to pay her Wi-Fi bill, right? So what I argued is, if you give poor rural people, other forms of income, other protections financially, basically they have far more bargaining power, and also they don't have the need to grow corn. So this time last year, Pur Thai, Thaksin Shinawatra's old party, was re-elected into government. Now I have a lot of critiques of the new generation of Pur Thai, but historically they have been able to work some absolute economic magic for the rural poor, as we saw under Thaksin's tenure. The question of whether they still have that capacity is not yet answered, but let me just quote a few little articles for you here. So, Bangkok Post, November 2024. The government, that's the new government, has managed to bring down the total number of informal debts by 670 million baht in just 2 months, solving 102,000 out of 140,000 debt cases reported to authorities as part of the push to reduce household debt burdens. According to Prime Minister Setha, who is also the finance minister, the progress is a result of extensive cooperation by all agencies tasked with solving the nation's debt problems, including the Interior, Finance, Justice, Education, and Agricultural and Cooperatives Ministries, along with several government-linked financial institutions. He said 102,000 of more than 140,000 appeals for help received by the government since the initiative was launched in November 28th of last year, have been successfully resolved, bringing down the total amount of debt being handled by the government initiative by 670 million baht. As of December 1st, the initiative was handling about 9.8 million baht in debt, which Mr. Setar pledged to clear up before his time as PM ends. So that's quite interesting, no? That debt tackling. Anyway, going on. Also not mentioned in that article, Setar has also repeatedly tried to cut interest rates, and the Bank of Thailand has fought back against it. So just for those who may not know, interest rates are how much kind of the interest there is on debt. So if the interest rate is, let's say, 10% annually, that's how much your debt is going up annually. So if it's cut to, say, 5%, your debt is increasing at a far slower rate. So they're trying to cut interest rates, right? Anyway, a couple more headlines that I won't read too much from. Bangkok Post, 1st of November 2023. More than 9,000 rai of army-owned land will be redistributed as a New Year's gift to landless farmers. Time Magazine, 11th of April 2024. Everything to know about Thailand's 14 billion digital wallet cash handout program. The program, which gives 10,000 baht to each 50 million Thais via a digital wallet in the fourth quarter, was finalized by a committee led by Setar this week. Well, that'll pay for the Wi-Fi, I'm sure. So those are the economic policies. And how about the on-the-ground schemes? Well, here's a few more headlines that I've had to, or actually it's just one that I've translated from Thai language media, because English language is totally lacking. Much of these policies, the on-the-ground policies, revolve around the governor of Chiang Mai province, Nirat Pong Sitawatwong, I think his name is, and the programs have been led by him from mid-2023 and going into 2024. And these policies have been laid out for this year as like a trial program, which will then be extended to the rest of the northern region. He is a Pur Thai governor, by the way. So this is from Thai PBS Policy Watch, a piece called Get to Know the Chiang Mai Model, a Complete Solution to the Smog Problem. So, quote, the central focus of the Chiang Mai model is that it allows various sectors in the area to participate in tackling issues autonomously, rather than waiting for the central government or outsiders to give orders to the area. It has set up a war room to monitor the situation reflexively from the bottom up. The concept of tackling fires has been changed from the previous zero burning policy to one focused on fire management. This is really important, and I should have mentioned this earlier. So I think ever since I've lived here, the basically the only government response has been, we will fine you if you do burning, or we'll jail you. Or I remember there were people talking about taking away farmers' lands, which is ironic because oftentimes they don't even own them, or they're in debt because of them. So basically it's only been punitive so far. And that was under the military government. And that was a zero burning policy, is what it was known as. And so here, this the concept of tackling fires has been changed from the previous zero burning policy to one focused on fire management. You can see how like punitive and disgusting that is, right? Because as we've kind of made very clear throughout this series, it really isn't the farmer's fault, as we said before, right? It's agribusiness holding the hand of the farmers, forcing them to light it, right? Anyway, so this fire management policy is part of a quota system which seeks to react to burning rates in different areas, permitting burning in certain places at certain times when appropriate. Clearing the stubble, the crop waste, will also be tackled without fire by financing machinery and the cost of gasoline for that machinery, as well as establishing groups and committees for transporting the waste, as well as factories to process it and forest land working groups. And actually, there were some very impressive pictures from earlier on this year where you could see these committees in action, like quite literally an army of people going up into the fields and clearing the land manually. And I don't know if you remember, but in the last episode, I said that there are two possible ways to clear a field. One is with fire, and the other would require an army. Well, in some places, at least this year, they got an army. All of the governing agencies involved in this have also stressed that these policies are aimed at solving the problem only in the short term, while long term it will require a far deeper response. And like I said, I don't know if Pur Thai still have the magic economic touch that they did in the Thaksin era. They've only been in power for around 9 months so far and have inherited a disastrous state of affairs. But again, as I said, in 2023, Chiang Rai had 20 days where the PPM was over 200. And this year there have only been two. And this year it was supposed to be much, much worse. I don't know, we gotta look. I mean, look, this new Pur Thai government, they are far from perfect. And they are also probably the worst form of Pur Thai that it could have been, all things considered. And it's certainly a long, long way from socialism or whatever. But like with sugarcane, like with rice, and like with corn, we have to look at these trends, the evidence, the numbers. We have to talk to farmers. And then we have to call it like we see it. So, even though this year has been a lot better, I don't want to end on too much of a positive note. The air outside my window is still grey. It's 40 degrees with supposedly clear skies. I just went to the market and I could barely see the sun. It is bleak. So, let's wrap up this series in a neat little package, shall we? At the end of World War II, Thailand was a rice basket and the bulkhead for Western imperialist anti-communism in Asia. The imperial powers developed the state's bourgeois class and exterminated any revolutionary movements within its peasant and worker population. They opened up the country's forest for settlers, pushing them into clearing the woodlands to produce more and more agricultural surplus for the market. Once any hope of revolution had been snuffed out by the 1980s, the bourgeois class ensnared them in yet more debt, forcing yet more clearances. The uplifting policies of the reformer Thaksin Shinawat were kiboshed by military coup and murder in the streets, pushing peasants even deeper into debt, forcing them into a hyper-exploitative neo-serf-like relationship with the new mass agribusiness housed in Bangkok, creating a latifundia in the periphery of the state. There, in that latifundia, the wonder crop corn flourished, easily sown, grown, and harvested. Corn production expanded 400% following the ousting of Thaksin and the imprisonment of the poor under debted bondage on their own lands. The mass agribusiness held the hands of the peasants as they set the waste product in the field aflame year after year, billowing smoke into the hills where it was trapped by the high mountain ridges, poisoning those very same peasants until the rainy season could relieve their suffering. To cover their tracks, the agribusinesses and the academy propagated a straw man myth of sugarcane being to blame, despite nary a blade of the stuff growing in the hills. And so here we are. The sky is grey. The fires will likely come again next year, I'll be here as ever, stewing away inside, dreaming of the rich, verdant July forests. And I know this episode isn't quite as long as the others, and I'm finishing up here. But I will close it on a song about, you know, life in the hills from Chiang Mai's most celebrated folk artist. Sorry if you don't understand the Kamueng language, but I promise you it's very nice. All about the hills. Hope to see you there, friends. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Ban ka yu bon doi mek mok loi tem pha yu klang phong phana tam pa sa khon doi kha bo ruai bo jon bo pen khon sam oi keut pen khon bon doi ma tong khoi ngo krai บ้านสู่อยู่ในเมืองมุงกระเบื้องสีใสบ้านข้าอยู่กลางไพรมุงแต่ใบตองตึงสู่ซอกเพลงฝรั่งข้าชอบฟังเสียงซึ้งเอาตึงตึงตะติดตึงข้าดีซึ้งก้องป่าบ้านคนดอยบ่มีแสงสีบ่มีทีวีบ่มีน้ำประปาบ่มีโฮงนำโฮงนวดครับป่าบ่มีโคลาแฟนตาเป๊ปซี่บ่มีเนื้อสันพัดน้ำมันหอยคนบนดอยชอบกินข้าวจีบ่มีน้ำหอมน้ำปรุงอย่างดีแต่หมู่เฮามีมีน้ำใจกินข้าวสู่ตำไปไทยนาถ้าสู่อยากกินปลาก็ต้องไปหาในห้วยถ้าสู่ปลูกดอกฝ้ายสู่ได้ใส่เสื้อสวยแต่ถ้าสู่อยากถูกหวยก็เสียใจด้วยคนบ้านบนดอยบ่มีแสงสีบ่มีทีวีบ่มีน้ำประปาบ่มีโฮงนำโฮงนวดคลับบาร์บ่มีโคลาแฟนตาเป๊ปซี่บ่มีเนื้อสันพัดน้ำมันหอยคนบนดอยชอบกินข้าวจีบ่มีน้ำหอมน้ำปรุงอย่างดีแต่หมู่เฮามีน้ำใจ